wrong script. This script. Three, two, one. Welcome, dear listeners. This is episode 120 of the Devon Dice podcast, recorded on the 3rd of March 2024. In this podcast, we'll be doing the usual wrap-up of board game news and crowdfunders, and hopefully a couple of games will be playing. Hi, I'm your host Joel, and joining me tonight we have Nick.
Hello, folks.
And Sam.
Yo.
So, yes, basically, we're just going to go through all the news and all the Kickstarters on this episode because only four days ago, we recorded the podcast about the North Devon Gaming event. And we've talked about all the games we've been playing. So, and there's a lot of news. There's some juicy news. Oh, so yeah. So.
Some of us just...
One of us stayed at home. Yeah. And there's actually some really juicy news bits in there, which we will get to. So a lot has happened in the last few weeks. We've not recorded a proper podcast. So let's get to it. So in the last news segment we did... We looked at, and it came about that Simon had done their first crowdfunding project on GameFound. So they've moved across from Kickstarter to GameFound, and we thought maybe they were trying it out, testing the waters, but it seems like GameFound has wooed them to join them.
And yeah, so they must have some exclusive.
So they must have some juicy contracts going on there to get their business. So, and I haven't actually looked at how their latest Kickstarter is going, or not Kickstarter, but project is going on there. Because last time I looked, it wasn't doing record breakers like their
last one didn't either, did it?
No,
the last one underperformed quite a lot. I wonder if there's anywhere. Anything like a reason that they were hoping that GameFound might get them a different audience? Maybe people at Kickstarter are a bit GameFounded out, a bit Simon'd out now.
Possibly. I think their last one on Kickstarter was the DC Zombicide game. And actually, in the last week or so, after we berated it, it actually did quite well and did earn a fair chunk of money. Towards the end, a lot of backers coming into it. So, it did okay. But yeah, the latest one, I don't think it's doing that well. I'm just trying to see if I can bring it up quickly. Preparation is everything here. Ice and fire, isn't it? Hopefully.
Yeah, it's nearly $2 million.
Okay, so it's picked up a little bit.
Yeah, it's finished now. So it's,
what did it finish on?
Nearly $1.9 million.
Oh, what, on the Kickstarter one?
Backers. Oh, on the Kickstarter. Sorry, on the GameFound. I was looking at.
Oh no. So, what you're looking at? Ice and Fire Tactics. I take it, or
yeah,
Fire and Ice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Song of Ice and Fire Tactics. Yeah. So it seems like that's about the right. That's about the average for the Simon big miniatures stuff.
Yeah.
I think they are. They're no longer like the trendsetters in that arena. They're just kind of like they've got their fan base. They make the sort of games that a known audience want, and they pretty much get everything. So it feels like if it doesn't do 1.5 to 2.5 million, that's like the average kind of thing for a Simon project. It feels like.
Yeah. But then they had their record breakers like the Marvel stuff, and Marvel wasn't their biggest project, I don't think, to fund. Or was it? I think it was actually. I'm thinking of Kingdom Death Maker. That was like King the Death biggest Monster. One to thing. That's it, Death Monster. That was the biggest thing to fund on Kickstarter, wasn't it? But so yeah, I don't know if they've, we said, they've shot themselves in the foot quite a bit with their audience. Way too many miniatures, way overpriced, and shipping and taxes really screw you. When you come to finish off your pledge. So, I definitely think twice about backing anything they do because it's just too expensive. You need a new mortgage.
Yeah.
So, but hey, they still, yeah, still bringing in a little bit of money.
And we'll see how their move to GameFound changes things.
Yeah.
See if that new audience actually brings in some new business for them.
I think their next Marvel project, they must be bringing out another one soon. We'll test
the DC Zombie side made $2.5 million, didn't it? Which is pretty good going. So
pretty good. It's not as when you compare it to $9 million with the Zombicide Marvel one. That's a quarter.
I do wonder. I wonder if Kickstarter will see this as a reason to start properly implementing changes on their platform. Because Simon was such a significant amount of money that was bringing them in.
Oh yeah, 10% of $9 million.
It'll actually give them a kick to actually start putting proper tools into their Kickstarter things, because that's one of the things that GameFound really marketed on, is that they had proper organisation of pages and you didn't have limits on text and certain bits and things.
This is it. They
well, here's hoping that they will kick in something.
They introduce stuff that like creators want and backers want. Like you can see the stretch goals building up. They got like meter bars underneath each stretch goal of like, look, we're nearly there, we're nearly there, and it kind of gets you more kind of excited towards it. And like the feedback is good. The search bar is better than Kickstarter. Yeah, definitely GameFound.
It's more of a dedicated platform, isn't it? That's the thing. It's like Kickstarter isn't a game, you know, a tabletop game only platform. It's facilitating
yes.
a huge number of different projects, where GameFound can focus purely on games and game publishers and stuff. So it feels like it's a, you know, it's a horses for courses. But yeah, I'd imagine that Kickstarter will try and do something, because if they end up getting more and more bigger publishers sort of going off to a different platform, then they're going to have to start figuring out what it is they're not doing that's pushing people away.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely. Next one up, Nick.
Yeah, next one. Prospero Hall. If you people remember, a few weeks, months ago, when it was announced, they were owned by Funko Games. They were bought out by Funko a number of years ago. And Funko had effectively made the people working for Prospero redundant. They kind of axed them from the company. And the founders of Prospero Hall have basically set up a new publishing house, effectively what Prospero Hall was originally. So this was a number of folks, just counting them now, four of them, are going to be co-founders and directors, and they have spun off this new entity, which is called Tempest Workshop. There's not much news about that yet, about what they're going to be doing, but I think it'll be very interesting to see what they come up with, because some of the ideas they had when they were Prospero Hall were really, really good. And they were fine with Funko as well, but they just licensed through Funko. So we'll see if this brings about yet more good deliveries from the Prospero Hall team, because they were a very clever bunch of designers.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see whether or not they continue to get like licenses, if they pursue a license or two to get going, because it feels like that was their bread and butter, was very much turning a license. Didn't feel like it could have a board game, but actually coming up with a kind of interesting way of doing it, like Jaws and stuff. I can't believe they wouldn't want to keep doing things like that rather than try and go down the like an original thing. But you never know. I mean, it takes a lot of money to get a license, so see if any of them actually had contacts in any of the licensing companies or something.
I think, I mean, they had something beforehand, I think, but yeah, we'll see if they manage to keep some of those high quality IP.
Yeah, it's sort of said in the release that they haven't got any of the existing licenses that they had.
Yeah, indeed.
Funk as Prospero. So,
but I think that's fine. I think they will probably find their feet on something, maybe mid-range popularity.
I'm guessing Goliath Game bought out what they had purely for the content, purely for the licenses they had.
Oh, I imagine, yes.
More than anything else. So, yeah. But I'm looking forward to seeing what they do, because, you know, some of their stuff was actually, you know, like, none of it was kind of like revolutionary, but it was all, considering it was licensed games.
Yeah, they were really decent decent games.
You can get them like Tesco and things, but they were actually really good and really good price as well. You're talking about, you know, 15, 20 quid for a licensed prop game, which you just don't get anywhere else. So it's quite interesting.
Indeed. No. Yeah. So all best to them. It sounds like it'd be a good move for them.
Yeah, good luck with them.
And back to Joel for the next one.
So Nick brought this to my attention. I got super excited on this. so big fan of Flashpoint Fire Rescue. Yeah. It's pretty much could have been my first backing on Kickstarter, but I was a little bit late. Like when it was being talked about on a podcast, I went straight to Kickstarter. Like, what is Kickstarter? What's going on? And they were talking about this game, but I was too late to then. It was already funded. Because back in the day, it's like once it reached its funding goal, it ended. And so nothing else happened. There was no stretch goals or things like that back then. It was just like, we've got to our funding. We can now make this product kind of thing. It's weird time back then. Anyway, so Fast Forward Fire Rescue. Could have been my first. It was a game Claire brought me. One of my first games she brought me.
Yeah.
And we played loads of it. And I've got all the expansions, everything to it now. But just lately, they have announced that they are doing the Legacy game. Flashpoint Legacy Flame. Or Legacy of Flames? I think you might... Is that missing a word? Can't remember. But this is hitting Kickstarter... end of this month, I believe.
It is Legacy of Flame. Yeah, so, it's quite soon. It is Legacy of Flame.
So you can actually see Rado do a playthrough of one of the scenarios and see all the changes that are introduced to it. And it actually, from what I can see, it takes a lot of concepts from the expansions they've all done throughout the years. They got two of those binder books, which I use to make the play-in area. So you ain't just got like one map and you're going into the same house over and over again. You've got like, you flip over the pages required to deal with that mission at the time. So I think they said there's 12 missions that you'll do, and you've got characters from all the expansions, and you can upgrade them, make them better. They can die if they take too many wounds and you have to start again. And loads of stuff going on. It just looks really interesting, really awesome. I can't wait for it. 1 to 6 players. Plays in 45 minutes, apparently. So, I'm really, really interested in this. Can't wait for it.
It's pretty awesome.
Come out on the Kickstarter, which I do believe it is... end of the month.
Thanks. We'll put a link
thanks
up.
Nick. Definitely. Point. Links are in the post.
Can make you spend more money.
Thanks, Nick. But I told Claire about it.
This looks exciting.
She's excited about it. So she loves a good legacy game. So, I've never heard any of launch. I will do. 12th of March. So it could be, next week. Ish, next Tuesday. As usual. That's
data recording. Very cool.
Next.
You're up next again, Joel. You signed yourself the next one.
I did spray
this out.
How's
this new naming the news thing going?
I need a second screen because I'm going between screens at the minute. So, this one's quite old. Plaid Hat Games has announced their next Crossroads game. It's called Wandering Galaxies. And this is a first for them. It's going to Kickstarter. So I quite like all the Crossroads games that they do. I haven't bought their recent one. But this one looks really interesting again. It looks very cartoony. I'm just trying to see if there's any more information because it's just taking me to the Kickstarter page. But I remember reading stuff ages ago now about it, and I can't remember.
There's a little bit more on the actual Plaid Hat games.
Yeah, that's website. Probably where you need to go.
I'll drop the link in. Oops, sugar. There you go. Try that. But it looks like it's kind of more of the same, I would guess. based on the, you know, was it Forgotten Waters was the piratey one, then you got Freelancers, which is the kind of D&D-ish kind of one, and then this one's going to be a kind of Star Trek-ish kind of, not maybe not Star Trek, but you know, that kind of sci-fi setting. So I'm guessing it's going to be kind of more of the same sort of stuff with a strong narrative, app-driven narrative kind of thing.
Yeah,
I'm really interested in trying Freelancers just because I've heard good things, and the designer of it, Donald Schultz, is he was the DM on a live play and a real play D&D podcast. That's kind of where I first heard about him and his team. They were Bored with Life on YouTube.
That's like a
web series about board games, and I always find them really hilarious. And their live play D&D thing was just, I'd be walking to work and laughing my head off on the way I walked to work. People must have thought I was mad. So if he's involved in the story and stuff for it as well, which I'm sure he was, then I know I'm going to find it entertaining, so I really want to try it. And the same goes for the sci-fi one, I suspect. You know, considering the critical sort of response to Freelancers was so good, that I suspect that Wandering Galaxies is probably just more of the same of that, really, in terms of the, you know, mechanics, I would guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's using the same old thing of they've got the open binder and they've got action selections down one side and a beautiful picture on the other side. Cards and dice and standees. Yeah, again, it reminds me very much of Forgotten Waters, and we loved playing that when it came out. So, yeah, again, I keep saying I'm not doing Kickstarter anymore, but... things like this keep coming up, and I'm just like, oh no,
oh dear, always the way.
I'm guessing that the going to retail, because I'm not sure how well Freelancers did. I think it did critically well, but maybe didn't sell like bucket loads, so I'm wondering whether they're trying to cash in a little bit on the critical reception it got for Freelancers, but making it a bit more, you know, doubling down a little bit and doing it on Kickstarter as a bit more of a sort of hype builder, because it feels like Freelancers was a bit of a slow boil in terms of its popularity.
I think
so. We'll see.
The other issue might be is that they've come out of being owned by Asmodee, because that was that whole bit that they were bought by Asmodee, and then Colby Dalch actually brought back his company from them after I think they bought out a few flops and wasn't doing that well, and so he took it back. And I think this is still part of their kind of rebuilding process. So, even though it's been 4 years since he brought it back, there's actually a write-up which I started reading and then probably got distracted by something else. So, which is an interesting view of his account of what's going on, what's happening. So, yeah, I'll get back to reading that and hopefully it have highlight some more things that went on. Me again, cool. Just bringing up the link. I spotted this when I was looking for some other game in something probably to do with Clank, but the company doesn't own Clank anymore, so I don't know why I went there. I think I got distracted by something, so I went looking there for something for Clank, and then I got distracted by this. So, it's called, it's at Renegade Game Studios website, and it's search for UAPs. And it's just it's like a take on Search for Planet Unknown. No, Search for Planet X. Sorry, got that mixed up. So you're basically looking for UFOs, but UAPs, because they don't call them UFOs now, do they? They've changed the.
I will always accuse them of UFOs.
I know. And unidentified.
What's
that?
It's the most terrible, anomalous. It's the most terrible name for a game.
Yeah,
that's just
it is.
I love about it.
Unidentified anomalous phenomena. There we go.
That's it.
What I love about this as well is that the designer is listed as Ted Alsbach, who was wasn't there a thing a few years ago about he basically copied a game. Was it a Japanese game? Wasn't it? I think he got accused of copying for one of his werewolf things.
It was Werewords. Was
Werewords
accused of being copied of Insider?
Yeah, that's right.
Which he said was this one, he's listed just as, independently development.
Yeah, but in this one, it's like it's based on essentially the search for Planet X and the search for Lost Species, and this one's a completely different game, but it's designer Ted Allspark. But there, it's up front with the copying idea today in this one.
Yeah, yeah.
But also the most terrible name. Ugh.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It is an odd name. It's an odd name.
Yeah. Have you played Search for Planet X?
I want to. I quite like those kind of deductive-ish things, but I kind of prefer the science-ish stuff to like Cryptid and that kind of gubbins.
It's really good.
I think it's one of the. I'm not going to go buy it, but if someone else had it and it was being played, I think. Do you need the app? You need an app for Planet X?
Yeah,
as well?
You do. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm less keen on ones that need apps, just because I know that there'll be a time will come when it's going to become unavailable to play. So I'm always a bit hesitant, but I suppose that's an even more reason to play it now, because you know.
Yes, because you'll never get a chance in the future.
Yeah, if I get a game now, I hardly play it at all anyway. So I don't think I should worry about something 10 years down the line.
Indeed.
Yeah, that is the problem with it. Lewis has got it, so when I went to his house one time, we played it a couple of times. And it's really good.
Yeah, definitely.
Good game. And this one just caught my eye. I thought, okay, this seems taking bits of everything and putting it together, see if it works. But it's a pre-order at the minute. £42. I don't know if that's delivered. I can't remember. But yeah, you can go to their site.
It's including tax, but not delivery, I think. Yeah.
I think it's only like £10 for delivery, which is not bad.
For that price, though, it's just waiting for your local friendly game store.
Yeah.
Potentially.
I think I'm done. Am I done? I'm done. Nick, go.
That was your
this
list, yeah.
This was a juicy bit.
So this is fun. So Awaken Wilds had a video announcement last week with their plans for their 2024 releases. The first of which is that they're going to do a second printing of the Castles of Burgundy Special Edition. So any of you out there who missed the first one, Joel, that's you, you can now possibly pick up a copy. That's going to include the Kickstarter only ones they did last, the special bits that they did, like the 3D...
the acrylic tiles.
The acrylic tiles and the acrylic, all the other bits of the acrylic, which weren't part of the retail bit. So that's coming up in quarter two.
So you're interested
But then the
in
second
that,
one that they announced...
Sam, sorry. Nick,
I'm you interested? Kind of, if the price is... Oh, Nick, you mean? Sorry, go on.
No, you, Sam. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm going to... If the price is not stupid, I'll be tempted to get the acrylic tiles, I think, as a separate pack. Just because trying to get them outside of it now is ludicrously expensive, so
hopefully
it won't be ludicrously expensive to upgrade. But we'll see. I'll see what the price is, basically. But it'd be nice to have the even fancier bits just to really bling it out.
Yeah. I wonder if they're going to fix the slight sizing issue with the grid overlays as well, because they were just a couple of mils out.
Yeah, it's very difficult to get it lined up just right.
Slightly frustrating. I mean, it's perfectly usable. It's just slightly frustrating.
Once you put the tiles in it, you can't even notice it, though, so it's not too bad. But yeah.
Nick, did you get yours given to you, or did you buy yours?
Yes, because I worked in the solo mode, so I got
given
to me. Nice. But not, I didn't get the full whack.
But you still got the acrylic tiles.
Yeah, I want the other bits though that I didn't get. So yeah, I might have to go for those.
I want it all. Right.
So the second one that was announced, it's kind of the bigger one, which is a Puerto Rico special edition. So this is going to be in the same vein as Castles of Burgundy special edition. It's going to be a super deluxe version with special extra bits. They've got the only sample thing that they've got on the holding page on GameFound at the moment is a little 3D ship where you can put the goods. So they're not going to have cubes, they're little goods, 3D, what is it? They look like 3D printed goods squares, and you're going to load those onto the ships. We will see what comes of that, because there's no other information about it really at the moment, except that it's based on the 1897 version, which is the newer edition, which sets the game in the period of Puerto Rican history where they had just come out of slavery, and the freed slaves now were able to run their own plantations, just up to the point when America came and invaded them, took over. So it's in that area of time. But mechanically, it's an identical game. The gameplay is identical. But the interesting thing about this one is that it was noticed by some media folks a few days ago that the holding images that they've got on the GameFound page looked like they were AI art generated, because there were some weird artifacts which you commonly see with AI, like people with six fingers and a wagon wheel that was going into someone's leg and stuff. And so this kind of blew up a little bit, and then Ravensburger had to step in and tell Awaken Realms, no, you can't use AI art in any of the actual production. The holding images have now changed on the Game Found. They've just got the original 1897 box cover with a blurred cover saying special edition underneath it. I think the original image is still on Board Game Geek of the cover if you wanted to see it. It's certainly in, we'll link to it in the script, but there's a Board Game Wire article which highlights the examples of what was noticed. But yeah, they've taken that down quite quickly and just put sample imaging up. So it looks like they will very much not be using AI art, because Ravensburger have put their foot down about that, which is fair enough.
I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have done anyway.
I think it was probably
it was done just as a get it up there quick and have something that looks vaguely like...
Yep.
Cause it wouldn't even be the artwork that's in the game in any way, shape, or form anyway. So
no, it's all different. I mean, there aren't many places you can put artwork apart from like on the player boards, which already have them. So I'm not sure what they would have done there.
Yeah.
Maybe on some of the tiles, but
it's still a bit of a known goal. So
yeah. It's unfortunate, but they have rectified that for now. But there's no other information. But if you like Puerto Rico and you would like a special edition, then you might want to look out for this. Which is definitely not going to have AI.
It'll be on my list. It might join my Castles of Burgundy special edition as a classic, done as the nicest possible version.
Indeed.
I'll wait and see what it looks like, obviously. But it's another game that I've played that I was like, oh, I better play this, because it's an old classic that was, I think it was number one on BGG for a long time as well, wasn't it? I think
it was. 5 or 6 years or something.
It's another one that was like, I surprisingly like this.
It's a very good game. It's a very good design. It's very enjoyable.
And it did need a little bit of a kind of update to kind of remove the old, unfortunate historical elements.
The historical elements that weren't mentioned, they were just done in the
implied.
implied.
Yeah.
So we will see. But yeah, so if you're interested in that, take a look at that. That's on. There's a holding page on GameFound you can look at. We'll link to it in the notes. Sam said something controversial about not liking Marvel on the Discord chat. That's why I put in last week. There's something for Sam to say.
Nothing much. I'm just done with Marvel, guys. Come on, let's move along.
More Marvel games.
Yeah. Well, it does relate. We had on our Discord server.
Yeah.
But, it relates to the crowdfunding section. So.
Yeah, it's just one of those little things we had discussed on our Discord server. If you'd like to join in and tell me I'm wrong or even agree with me, come and chat to us on the Discord server.
Lewis made a surprise appearance and agreed with you. So,
that's right.
That was added. So, added bonus.
So that segues nicely into crowdfunding.
It does. Which goes on to Sam.
So, crowdfunding. Yeah, so crowdfunding, the first one up, it was kind of more like, now, just to give you guys a bit of an idea of how things happen behind the scenes in Devon Dice, we just kind of bombard each other with links to stuff that happens during the month so that we can add things if we need to the script. I wouldn't have had any kind of real intention of mentioning this one unless we were short of content. We've got plenty of content, we don't really need to talk about this one. But seeing as it's in the list and it's got my name against it, we'll go for it. Expedition Northwest Passage, a game from several years ago, is now back on Kickstarter in the HMS Terror edition. It is actually quite a cool game. It's kind of like a tile placement exploration game where you're sort of having to manage your movement, sort of exploring tiles with ice flows on them to be able to try and create a path from one side of the board to the other, and you're racing essentially the other players. Both with your boat
and the sun,
and with your and the sun that's going around the board, and that's essentially freezing sections of the board. So, if the sun's kind of like at the 9 o'clock position, if you think of it as a clock, then anything above that sort of 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2 o'clock, that's all frozen. Your boat can't move in those sections, so you can only move on with your sled, your dog sled. And that sun is moving around each round. That sun is going to move around. So your movement is very restricted in terms of that. So you're constantly trying to pick the tiles that you need to be able to make sure you create waterways and straits to be able to get to where you need to get to. And also time when you're going to go with your sled out onto the ice. It's just it is a clever little game that I remember liking quite a bit when I had it. But it is a bit convoluted in terms of sort of managing it. It takes a little bit longer to play than you'd probably like it to do at the time. So I was kind of hoping this might have a little bit more of a rework of the rules and stuff to maybe smooth things out. But it looks like it's essentially a jazzed up presentation of the existing
rules.
Yeah,
some really nice components. It comes with this Terra expansion as well. It comes with a solo and co-op mode, which is new as well.
Yeah.
And it's not too bad a price, £42 for the base pledge, although it's in the UK it's $22 shipping as well, so we're looking at about £55-56, which for a game these days is actually a decent retail price.
Yeah, I'd say it's not too bad, and especially with the component quality, it looks like you can get.
They call it pre-stretched, so it's got everything unlocked. It's just all there
another
already.
Another new terminology for you, but yeah.
But I really appreciate the fact it's got effectively one pledge level, and that's it. It's get the whole lot. And there's a group pledge and a retailer pledge, but there's for the one game, you just have one thing, and there's no stretch goals to reach for. It's just there you go, everything's there.
So that's quite nice
to see that.
And the other bonus over the previous version is that it's in a standard size box. Huzzah!
Yes.
It's not some weird, but weird shaped box. It's just in a standard Ticket to Ride looking size box. And that looks really smart and cool as well. It's
a
nice game.
It's estimating delivery in August this year, which I think is quite amazing.
I didn't notice that, actually. Yeah,
that's four or five months. Yes, yeah.
So it's US, Canada, South America fulfillment July, UK, it's June potentially for UK.
So they're obviously already printing it. Which is good.
This is hence it's pre-stretched. There's no point in it's all locked in.
Indeed,
it's going.
They've already done it all.
But it's a good one. It's modestly beaten its stretch its funding goal, but
indeed, it's one I've always wanted to try. I haven't
it's,
played it.
It's a good. I mean, it is on Board Game Arena, so it is something that we can play on there as well.
Oh, let's do it. I think I might have played it on BG actually once.
Yeah, I haven't played it for a long, long time. I have to refresh myself of it, but it is a very cool kind of. The cool aspect is that bit of timing your move from the boat to the sled, because you can control both at the same time. So like you just choose whether you're using your actions for the boat or for the dog sled and stuff. But it is quite cool in terms of like an interesting take on a race game.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Cool. Over to Joel for the next one.
I was about to say, I haven't played even the original, so like you lot are talking about, I was like, I don't know what's going on here. I've never played it.
I think you'd like it.
I did realise we put, I put in a news article that should have been at the top and not in the crowdfunding. That one there.
Never mind.
Basically, there's a new legacy game, another legacy game coming from Rob Darvio and Matt Leacock. Ziggurat. So basically, firefighting at an old ruins. It looks interesting, but I don't know. It's not going to trump my Flashpoint Fire Rescue.
Indeed, but it's Matt Leacock and Rob Davio, so I'm intrigued to know more about it.
Cooperative.
Because they are very good designers. It's got a little 3D pyramid type thing as part of the game. And Legacy, so I'm intrigued. A cooperative legacy game, which is the second one on the list this week.
It is. And it's only over 6 chapters, which is an interesting choice.
Well, if it's playable, I assume it's going to be playable afterwards once you finish, maybe. Otherwise, that's not a lot.
Not much more.
Yeah,
no,
so
it doesn't
you can
say
play it again and again. So.
Oh, does it? Okay. Wow. Good-o.
Yeah, so we'll see. Good stuff.
My next crowdfunding,
definitely backed. And it's Thunder Road, Vendetta, Carnival of Chaos. I mean, we've gone on about this game. My first play of it, I loved it. I instantly tried to see what I could get on eBay, and every copy of the Chrome edition is like 500 plus. I'm just like, nah, I can wait for it to come down in price. And then luckily, not long after that, the Restoration Games announced that they're bringing it back out on Kickstarter with the Chrome edition, with an expansion. So, which is just awesome, because you can get everything that if you missed out on it and played it, you can get it all and more, and not missing out on anything. Probably just I think a bit of a price rise from the original, but that's not a surprise with the way life costing is going at the minute. But hey ho! But the new expansion looks quite cool, because it seems to have this arena part in the middle where, instead of just a long track of road that you're racing down, you're now racing into the middle of this arena, and seeing what chaos happens when you get there. Again, just excited. And what I like, the interesting thing they've done, so yes, the expansion, if you've already got the Chroma box, which was a big box, anything and everything fitted into it, if you've already got that, what they're offering is a big lid. So you could get the new expansion that sits on top of everything, and then the big lid fits down over the top to make it look right. That's the way to put it. Or you can buy a folded space, I think it is, insert. And if you get that and make it up, it will hold everything within the standard box. Within the standard Chrome box, I should say. Nice. So, interesting ways of them sorting out and getting all the expansions into one. Super excited
for that. Very cool. Yeah, looks really good. I still need to play Thunder Road at some point, because you've talked it up so well. It's got such a lot of reviews.
Sam has as well. Sam likes it.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, well, there we go.
I would back it if it wasn't ludicrously expensive, and if I wasn't trying to convince several other people to get it so I don't have to.
So,
who's next? Me. Oh, it's me.
It's you, new. Yeah.
So I announced these.
We will get used to this naming thing. Yeah.
I mentioned these a few podcasts ago, maybe three or four or five podcasts ago. That's coming up soon, and they're now live. These are the Cascadia Roll and Write games, Rolling Hills and Rolling Rivers, which are from the guys who brought Cascadia. And these are effectively, they are doing what Cascadia does, but they have it in it's a flip and roll and write, really. You have some pads with kind of hex maps on them, with different terrains, and little tracker mat as well to track animals. And you've got a deck of cards which have your terrains and your what were the tokens in Cascadia, which are all pre-printed on the cards. And you also roll the dice. You each have some dice that you roll, and that gives you extra icons that you can take personally as well. And you are trying to gain a certain number of creatures and then expand your terrain. I'm not sure the difference between Rolling Hills and Rolling Rivers. I imagine it's just thematic, probably. Maybe a few bits of other changes in there, but it's got the beautiful artwork that Cascadia had on all the cards. It looks like a nice, compact little version of themed with Cascadia. So if you like Cascadia, then check those out. It looks quite cute.
Yeah, a bit like Sam, who says he's done with Marvel and pretty much done with Roll and Writes.
Yeah, the map sheets are not very enthralling. They are very functional, I would say. I think the artwork on the cards is what is driving it, probably. With these lovely vistas. But yeah, have a look. There's a lot of playthroughs on there, so
The main benefit is that it's actually quite cheap. But
it's cheap and it's a small box. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's doing quite well as a result of that. I'd sit much, much rather not even playing this. I can't really say from the gameplay, but I'd much rather play Cascadia itself than a roll and write of it.
Yep.
it feels like this is something that should have come out maybe in two or three more years rather than like a year or so after the main game. But, you know, can't blame them for trying to cash in on the popularity of a pre-existing property. So, you know.
Indeed.
But, yeah.
Yeah, my next one is it's not really crowdfunding. It's actually a pre-order on GameFound, and it's CMON. And I think they're just using up their IP of the Marvel Universe. And it's basically the deluxe starter set of the multiverse for Marvel. So it's a role-playing game. It's all the books you can get. You can be one of the superheroes that you always wanted to be, and play a role-playing game in this multiverse and see what the outcome is. And that's basically it. It does say it comes with miniatures. It's not miniatures. They're acrylic standees. So I don't know how they get away with saying miniatures. But hey-ho. No one's pulled them up with it yet. But yeah, it's just interesting. If you really like the Marvel Universe and you want a RPG set for it, then this is it. It's it's about $30 for it, which ain't a bad price. I just haven't seen what the shipping would be. I was just seeing if I can get to that quickly.
but if it's seen one, it's going to be like $90, probably. Even for a book.
Probably. Oh, there's no shipping on it. I can't find it quickly.
Oh, but so yeah, it's fun. That'll be a fun extra for you when it does ship.
Yeah. So if you like all that, then it's there, as I said, as a pre-order, not a funding thing.
I was going to be flippant about it and be like, yeah, this is an example of being done with Marvel, and I wouldn't want to play it, but I do get that, you know, it is interesting in the sense that there isn't really a kind of official role-playing game set in.
Yeah, it's just surprising.
Really. The only thing is that, as ever, you're kind of limited by the DM's imagination a lot of the time and this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, I mean, bearing in mind, you can pretty much do whatever you want these days with Marvel, but I don't know. It would be interesting to see what people can do with it. Not for me, because I am literally so fed up with Marvel now that I can't even talk. But at least the price point is good.
There we go.
It's the only thing going for it.
Nice. Yeah.
So, shall we carry on the flow of Kickstarters? Sorry. Yeah. I was doing a good segue there.
Good segue. We're going to flow into flow.
We're going to flow into flow.
So, this is a Kickstarter called Flow from Pika Games. This is on Kickstarter now, designed by Henry Audubon, Yoma, and Johnny Pack, with lovely artwork from Andrew Bosley and some nice 3D sculpts. It is a game about being a heroic, going on a heroic journey across the iceberg sea. Some very nice pieces, isn't it? I don't know much about the game. It's looks very cute. It's got the kind of feel, because it's Andrew Bosley artwork, it looks kind of like Everdell in its presentation and its artwork. But it looks like a very cute little game. Well, not little, it's quite big. There's a lot of stuff in it. So lots of nice 3D sculpts. A lot of pieces in it, really, actually. I haven't checked how much it actually is. £56 for the basic version. So not too bad. There's lots of extras you can buy, of course.
And this kind of comes down to my pet hate at the moment with Kickstarters, and has been for a couple of years, and why I gave up on it for a long time. You got a basic pledge level, but no one will really want the basic one because all the nice shit is in another bit. Stuff is in another bit. But then you've got like the Epic Hero Pledge, which is $145. So you're talking about 135 quid. Mm. And that's got loads of stuff. The box is massive. It's got expansions you won't even use, probably. It's got lots a soundtrack mats, CD, player mats. And it's just like, oh my God. It's just people that back all this stuff, they must have warehouses these days to store all their Kickstarter stuff, because it's just madness.
And the most backers is on that Epic Hero level.
Yeah,
almost
right.
2,000 backers on the Epic Hero level, and all the other levels are 300, 400, 200.
If you love it, but you kind of see games. What's the other? I was thinking of another, not Andrew Bosley, it was the artist that did Brass the new Brass games. I can't remember what they're called now. Mr. Cuddington. What was the one that they did? It was like that big kind of sci-fi-ish, water-worldy kind of arrangement game. Tidal Blades.
Tidal Blades. Yes.
Tidal Blades.
Waterworld. Yeah, I can see the link to Waterworld there.
So it's the same sort of thing with that. It's just ginormous, comes with heaps of stuff. I just find it absolutely mad. Anyway,
this isn't that much though. It's like a couple of expansions and CD and some neoprene mats. I've now read the overview and gameplay information, so I can tell you what it's actually a bit more about. So you're going on these quests, and you are it's not story driven, but it's sandboxy in nature. And so you are introduced to the game's rule set as you go along by playing some introductory games, which just introduce the mechanics, or you can just play it as a light game. And then you have this unlock system where, depending on your player's collective progress, it unlocks certain new things and certain milestones, which change the future games. So it does sound, it sounds quite interesting. I'll have to look a bit more into it. But yeah, do check it out. It's got some beautiful stuff in it.
It's the kind of game about 3 or 4 years ago when I was actually actively backing stuff on Kickstarter and excited about everything, I'd have probably backed it straight away because it's got the right look for me and sounds like my kind of game.
Indeed.
But now I'm older and wiser and more skint, I don't bother.
I'm very picky now with what I am packing. So it's usually stuff I've done already or like Thunder Road Vendetta, like, definite.
Yep.
But others I'm just kind of not taking the chance, kind of thing. I don't want to.
I saw you back that little one, Forks. I can't remember.
Yes.
Last time or not? Yeah, Forks looked very cute.
Where did I see that?
But then that was $11, including shipping, wasn't it? So it was worth doing, I think.
Or picking up from UK Games Expo. So I was just like, all right, do that.
Indeed. Yeah.
So
yeah, then get £10.
That reminds me, I saw a little bit of news on Facebook. Someone asked, Renegade Games, are they going to be at UK Games Expo this year? And they said yes, they're going to be demoing the new HeroScape set. I was like, ooh.
Oh, right.
So
intriguing. Yeah.
And then who wants to take the last one? Or we not bother? We discouraged.
I've never even looked at it.
I'll do it very quickly then. So this is Ascending Empires Zenith Edition, which is a re-release of Ascending Empires, which was originally from Z-Man, and this is from the new company that Zed Slavtcher started up, which is Play to Z. And this is it boxes itself as a fast 4X sci-fi adventure. So it's a 4X in. It reckons 75 minutes, so probably going in the same market as Last Light.
BS at that point.
Yeah.
Doing 75 minutes. Just in the components, there's no chance.
Whoa, there's a lot of stuff in there. Yeah, there are a lot of there.
It'll take you 75 minutes to unpack it.
Yeah. So this is the first game from Play to Z. So if you wanted to have a look at what they're doing with the Zephyr Slasinger, then go and have a look. The base level pledge is £87. Actually, that is the only pledge. That's the one thing you can pledge. Again, well done for them for not having multiple different options.
Give them time. They're being all in.
It doesn't
pledge
look like they have any stretch goals either. So they've done the basic and that's it. They add in more.
So this is just a foundation of starting up his company. Then at the end of the day, you just like, my company. Hopefully. That's it. That's all the news.
That's all
the Kickstarters.
Oh, there was a lot of that.
We can get into played games. Now, to be honest, I've not played a game since getting back from the weekend away. Mainly be way too busy, but also we did have friends around. We had Nigel and Karen around, and I introduced them to Coffee Rush, and they enjoyed it. It was good fun. It was still good fun. I do love the way it simulates that urge, that kind of keeping on top of stuff, and your orders are building up and they're moving down and you're like, oh my god, it's going to push out. But great little game. I love the components. The other one I've been playing, new to me, is St. Petersburg. on BGA, and oh, it's one of those. Yeah, it's one of those games I've avoided because
it's addictive. Isn't
it's old. It looks horrible.
Does the artwork put you off?
Yes. And
Sam from the Game Group was a visceral reaction to this artwork. It's so funny. I love it.
But love because artwork. I'm doing the tournament stuff at the minute with the Board Game Arena or Board Game League on BGA, and that was one of the options. I was like, I might as well just play it and see what it's like. And like, it started.
It's not hard to pick up at all.
No. I looked at the rules and I was like, this is quite simple. All right, I can get on with this. And it is just buying cards. And then you go to the next part and you can buy more cards if you've got money. And then you come back again. And
that's the key.
You're
buying cards which will give you money in the income phase, and you're buying cards that will give you VP in the building phase, and then you're buying cards that give you income and VP and also in-game bonuses for the aristocrats. And it's the balance of you want cards that make you money so you can buy the VP cards, but you can't spend all your money early or you burn out your engine. So you have to have that trigger point, that twist point, like in Dominion, where you have to pivot from cards that are giving you increasing your engine to cards that are giving you endgame VP. I love it. I love St. Petersburg. It's so clever.
Yeah, definitely. So, I wouldn't mind giving it a play in real life.
I have a copy, so I can bring that at some point.
Ooh. Okay.
Devon DiceCon. Devon DiceCon. That's the list.
Three week con it's going to be now, so.
It is, isn't it? Right. Here we go. I can add an item. St. Petersburg.
Right, Nick.
So on my list. So I'll go through these quickly. So I've got a copy of Martin Wallace's Bloodstones, which is the new Martin Wallace kind of war game, Euro game-ish combo thing, which is very interesting. It comes with cloth mats, which they're also doing in Steam Power. It seems to be their new thing is with doing cloth mats so they can reduce the weight of the boxes and include lots of maps. So it comes with 6 maps on cloth maps. And all the units are little like domino tiles. So they're kind of acrylic Bakelite tiles with screen printed units on them. And the idea of the game is it's a very much a heavy area control game where you are, the dudes on the map, where you're placing out. You place out your units, you're trying to build villages because you score points every time you have to shuffle. You run out of tiles in your bag and you have to shuffle them back in. You score for all of your villages that are out on the board. You can also score points from fighting other players and winning the battles. And you have a certain number of actions you can do on your turn where you're spending tiles from your hand to do other stuff with your other tiles that are on the board. It's got an interesting battle resolution system where you are each drawing from a battle bag, which has, 7 or 8 tiles in it. And they have tiles in there powered between 2 and 5. I think there's 2 of each, something along those lines. And then you add on all your unit powers that are on the map. And all of your units have certain modifiers based on whether they're on which hex terrain type. They're not hex maps. Which terrain type, whether they have special abilities, like the giants always get extra draws. The dragons can fly off, they're super powerful. And you battling this out, and it's a very interesting combination of area control, and it feels like kind of like a war game, and it feels like a Euro game where you're really just trying to push for points. And it's very interesting. I still haven't played it more than 2 players. I think it's going to shine better at probably 4 or 5 players, because you want that chaotic interaction of multiple forces all coming, kind of like Battle of 5 Armies and Lord of the Rings. You want all of those forces coming together and clashing with each other. I think that's where it's going to shine. But it's a really lovely production. The box is insanely heavy considering it's got cloth mats in, but it's because it's got so many of these domino tiles in. It just weighs it down. And it did come with, very amusingly, it comes with a carry bag, not canvas, but I can't remember what material it is. But it's a carry bag, so you can carry all the stuff, because there's no solid boards in there. You can carry the whole stuff in this little carry bag. As long as you don't need the rule book, that will get scrumpled. And for solo people around there, who are listening, it does come with an 18 campaign solo mode as well, which I've yet to try. I need to try it out. because it sounds very interesting. But yeah, so check it out. Bloodstones from Martin Wallace. Next up, I got to play at the Game Group the other week the classic Glory to Rome, which is the now very much out of print, never going back into print game from Carl Chudok. And this was the original ugly version of the game with the artwork that looks like it come from the original Bonanza. If you remember the Bonanza artwork with the comic bean images, that level of artwork, which is the version that Mike had, who taught us the game. Really, really enjoyed it. I have played the games that it's based on, the Motonai I've played, which I did not enjoy anywhere near as much. And there's another game called Uchronia, which Carl did as well, which is similar, more similar, but not the same. But this, yeah, Glory to Rome, we played it five player. Really interesting interactions. I really like how the card play works, where you're selecting an action, but the action card you play to select that action then goes into the middle of the table and is then in a generic pool that everyone can get to. You're trying to build up your workers and build up your resources to build your buildings that get your points, and you have to trigger the end of the game in some ways. Really, really clever game, and I can see why it's so highly regarded. And obviously, we'll never get a copy of a real version. I do have a print-and-play version that someone did at some point, which I'm tempted now to try and print out and make a proper copy of. But yeah, really, really good game. I don't know if either of you guys have played Glory to Rome.
Yeah, I played both Black Box and the original version, which is both the same thing. But I managed. I seem to remember the first time I played it was at UK Games Expo, and once I kind of got, you know, taught the rules and stuff, but I was told there was this one card that you can get if you get it at the right time with the other right card, you win the game straight away.
And, the forum, that is, yeah.
Yeah, and I got it. So I was like, oh, okay, boom. Done it. So I was just like, yeah, I like this game, this is cool.
Yeah, Mike had the forum at one point. He was, I think, one worker off triggering that, and then one of us triggered the end of the game by running the deck out, and I happened to have the most points, so I managed to win that game. So I was very pleased at that. But yeah, Mike was very close to getting the forum and insta-winning.
Yeah. It's kind of got the same kind of vibe.
American Mike, yeah. Friend of show.
Yeah, I must have played his copy, because I have played it the once, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
That kind of multiple routes to victory kind of bit, and trying to beat people to the punch and guess who might be trying to do what element, is kind of the same feeling I get from Discworld, Ankh-Morpork.
Yes.
You've got
the
different kind of characters, and you sort of
they've all got their asymmetric.
Are they doing that? Are they trying to do this way? And do I need to stop that, or should I just go? Yeah, you know, I quite like that kind of game where you're trying to suss out, you know, what the role that someone else is, and trying to find the right strategy to stop it, while trying to win yourself, obviously.
Yeah,
yeah, it's good.
Yeah, that's very cool. And the last one I'll mention is actually an RPG. This is called Colossal, and this is a solo journaling RPG which I picked up. Last month, I think it was. And this is, it's a journaling RPG. So you are doing a lot of the creative writing yourself, but it's a lot of story, effectively story prompts, and you're using a deck of cards, and you draw a certain number of cards as your adventure, and they trigger a number of different effects or actions or scenarios, and you're trying to build your character, which you are running through this place, to fit the events that are happening. And basically it's a world in which you're in this colossal castle, hence colossal, where every room in the castle is effectively the size of a whole land somewhere. And you can get to the edges and go between the rooms, and then you get to another whole land, and then there's a whole ocean, and you go through that. The roof is so high that it's clouds, you can't see it. There's stuff on the other side of the ocean. And in this world, there are these things called rooks, which are like the enemies, the bad guys. But they are almost like golem-style autonomic automatons, which wander around as kind of autonomous. They have no, as far as you know, no sentience. But they are going around fighting.
Oh, right.
The villagers, you don't know why, and a lot of the storyline prompts are trying to discover why it is. And inside these rooks are little rooklets, which are like little miniature rooks, And if you can get those out, they you can kind of they become your familiars. They follow you around and do stuff for you. And each of the classes that the characters can be has a certain adaption where they have like an appendage that's from one of the rooks that they've defeated in the past. Like they have a sword or they have a machine and things like that. So there's it's a fascinating world to explore. And it's very, very simple to run because you just draw 3 to 5 cards per round, find out what happens, and then you just write a journal entry as if it's like a day's journal about what happens to your character with these effects.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I'm very much enjoying it. And it wasn't too expensive. They had a January sale on, so I think it's £20 for the hardback book. And I've got a deck of cards with it as well, which were really nice cards. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying them. It's fun.
Hmm. Awesome.
Whereas for me, I'll quickly go through my three. So first up, The Fox Experiment, my favourite. I think I put it as my favourite game of last year. Fox Experiment. I've now got my copy and I've played it a couple of times in the last week. Really good.
And you still enjoy it.
Still yes. Really good. It's reinforced again the cleverness. It's subtly clever in the way that it's merged the mechanics with the theme.
Mm.
Which is again, like I'll reiterate again. I think is Elizabeth Hargrave's strong point is finding ways to simply, you know, leverage a mechanic to reinforce a basic fundamental of the theme that's chosen for the game. And in this case, it's the generational, multi-generational fox breeding element where, you know, you kind of breed certain traits into the one generation of foxes. That means it's got a predilection, obviously, of giving you more dice for those traits, which means you're going to probably propagate that trait more in the next generation. It's so clever.
Yep.
It's so simple, but so clever. I really enjoy it. It's much more simple than I remembered it being when I first played it, but the better for it as a result, because it wasn't it's not a complicated game to teach as a result. One round in and everyone's doing their, because it's all quite simultaneous. You know, you roll your dice and then you group your dice together and you spend your tokens to kind of create the faces you need, and then you can tick your boxes on your card, and then you just say, right, who's got what? Oh, I've got 8, I've got 9, I've got whatever. It's really, really nice. And then you do your upgrades and you go, I'm going to spend those 2 to do that and 2 to that. You know, really, really good. So it's one to stick around for a while, that one. Next up for me is Wormspan, which I suspect you guys have talked about already in the previous pod, which I haven't listened to
we
yet,
did indeed.
In all honesty. Bear in mind, you only published it about 2 hours ago, so I think I've...
I did. It's not that it's been lazy. I literally put it out this morning, or no, this afternoon. So.
I saw it appear on my YouTube list, and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I better download that so I can hear it. I got to play Wormspan on Sunday. And yeah, it's good. I like it. I like the way that you have to kind of prepare the cave for the dragon before you place it in the zone. That's quite a nice element. The thing I found and also it's just like the laying the eggs bit isn't obviously a thing, because in this case you get eggs as a kind of income thing, and then you spend those as you need to kind of stuff. I quite like the mechanics involved there. The interesting thing I found was that one of the complaints that Wingspan has is around player interaction, and there being very limited player interaction. Mm-hmm. There is almost none in Wormspan. It's like okay, we'll address that, and then not do any at all. So at least in Wingspan, you've got when this person does this, you get something, or you know, like the vulture will say, if someone hunts successfully, you can take a food from the supply and stuff. So you're kind of constantly involved in...
You do have those cards anyway. That give players other things as well as you.
Yeah, so it says
you get
offs,
2 and you get 1. But yeah, that's not really interaction, because you're not directly affecting them. You're just giving them a little bit when you're getting a lot.
And you're not playing a card that then triggers, because I'd play a
vulture. You can't.
I go, oh, he's played an eagle, I'm going to play that vulture, because hopefully that will mean I'll get food coming in, you know, all the time and stuff. So I'd say there's more player interaction in that sense, passive player interaction, obviously, but Wingspan has got more than Wormspan, I'd say. But ultimately, it was still fun to play, and it was sufficiently different to Wingspan that you could see that it was inspired by to some degree, but actually it feels like its own thing, which was good. I liked that. And the last one I played, not last week, the week before, is MLEM Space Agency, which is Radikanitsia's kind of push your luckish kind of rocket based game. Paper thin, there's no theme, as it's worth writing so
that's got a cat what Joel said as well.
Yeah, it's got a cat on the box, and that's as much cat theme as there is in it, quite frankly, other than the cat tokens. That's it. It's basically a bit like Celestia, but with a bit less fun. But ultimately, but an easier game as a result. Yeah, I think it's easier
Sam,
to kind of.
You do realise you've spoken about this on the last one you were.
Oh, have I?
Yes.
Oh, in that case, don't worry about it.
I thought you were bringing something new to it.
It's
that's
the same
why I
comment.
Left it in.
No.
At least I'm consistent.
Yeah, no, I just hadn't remembered that. I must admit, halfway through that diatribe, I was like, I think I may have said something about this.
Yeah.
but yeah, I was like, it can't have been the podcast because we haven't done a pod since then. But obviously we have. So yeah, forget that then. I've played MLM once, and yeah, it's all right. There you go.
That's fine. Awesome. So we're going to close it out there because we've gone way over our allotted time on this. So we're going to quickly close up the episode and say thanks for the guys for doing this. If you want to check out anything we've talked about in this show, you can go along to the show notes and there's links to all the games and articles that we've talked about. So you can click on those and discover them yourselves. Join us on our Discord channel for the conversations and chats we're having there and throwing links at each other to try and really confuse us of what's going on. And yeah, that's it. Thanks guys for doing the show again, and let's say good night.
Very welcome. Good night, all.
Good night.
And good night from me. So yeah, I started putting names against bits in the script. So
yeah, that's
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could just start talking
choose
about
for whether you're going to talk it. Yeah, I think it's the right way to do it. It's good.
Do it. I think that's it. Right. So yeah, we'll just do 40 minutes, and then see what happens. And then the second one, I've basically put a topic tapas.
Yeah, I like that.
Oh, crud.
I put that as a title.
I've looked on that. Right, okay.
I'll give him a trademark, a registered trademark, and a copyright. With that name.
Oh, brilliant.
That's a great name for it, I think. Tapas.